Chapter 24. A Strengthening Storm. Mid-afternoon sunlight should have been slanting through the windows of Rand's bedchamber, but a hard rain was falling outside, and all the lamps were lit to hold off a twilight darkness. Thunder rattled the glass-filled casements in the windows. It was a fierce storm that had rolled down out of the Dragon Wall faster than a running horse and brought a deeper cold, almost deep enough for snow. The raindrops pelting the house were half-frozen slush, and despite blazing logs in the hearthstone, a chill clung to the room. Lying on his bed with his booted feet propped one atop the other on the coverlet, he stared up at the canopy and tried to put his thoughts in order. He could disregard the thunderstorm outside, but Min, snuggling under his arm, was another matter. She did not try to distract him. She just did it without trying. What was he to do about her? About Elaine and Avienda? Those two were only vague presences in his head at this distance from Camelin. At least, he assumed they were still in Camelin. Assuming was dangerous when it came to those two. All he had of them at the moment was a general sense of direction and the knowledge they were alive. Min's body was pressed tight against his side, though, and the bond made her as vibrant inside his head as she was in the flesh. Was it too late to keep Min safe? To keep Elaine and Avienda safe?
What makes you think you can keep anyone safe?
Luz Theron whispered in his head. The dead madman was an old friend now.
We are all going to die. Just hope that you aren't the one who kills them.
Not a welcome friend, just one he could not rid himself of. He no longer feared killing Min or Elaine or Avienda, any more than he feared going mad. Madder than he already was, at least, with a dead man in his head and sometimes a foggy face he could almost recognize. Did he dare ask Cadswain about either one?
Trust no one,
Luz Theron murmured, then gave a wry laugh.
Including me.
Without warning, Min punched him in the ribs hard enough to make him grunt.
You're getting melancholy, sheepherder, she growled. If you're worrying about me again, I swear I'll...
She had so many different ways of growling, Min did, each matched to very different sensations through the bond. There was the light irritation he felt from her now, this time touched with worry, and sometimes there was a sharp edge, as if she were refraining from snapping his head off. There was a growl that almost made him laugh from the amusement in her head, or as close to laughing as he had come in what seemed a very long time, and a throaty growl that would have heated his blood, even without the bond.
None of that now, she said warningly,
before he could move the hand resting on her back and rolled off the bed to her feet, tugging her embroidered coat straight with a reproving look. Since bonding him, she was even better at reading his mind, and she had been good enough before.
What are you going to do about them, Rand? What is Cadswain going to do?
Lightning flashed in the windows, almost bright enough to wash out the lamps, and thunder boomed against the window glass.
I haven't yet been able to see what she was going to do ahead of time, Min. Why should today be different?
The thick feather mattress sagged beneath him as he swung his legs over the side and sat up facing her. He almost pressed a hand to the old wounds in his side without thinking, then caught himself and changed the movement to buttoning up his coat. Half-healed and never healing, those two overlapping wounds hurt since Shadar Logoth. Or maybe he was just more aware of how they throbbed, the heat of them a furnace of fever trapped in an area smaller than the palm of his hand. One, at least, he hoped, would begin to heal with Shadar Logoth gone. Maybe there had just not been enough time yet for him to feel any difference. It was not the same side that Min had fisted. She was always gentle with that, if not always with the rest of him. But he thought he had kept the pain hidden from her. No point in giving her something more to worry over. The concern in her eyes and in her head must be about Cadswain. Or the others. The manor house and all of its outlying buildings were crowded now. It had seemed inevitable that sooner or later someone would try using the waters left in Kyrian. Their Aes Sedai had not blared that they were going off to find the dragon reborn, but neither had they been particularly secretive. Even so, he had never anticipated those who had arrived with them. Davram Bashir, with 100 of his Saldaean light horse, dismounting in a wind-driven soaking rain and muttering about ruined saddles. Over half a dozen black-coated Ashaman, who for some reason had not shielded themselves from the downpour. They rode with Bashir, but it had been like two parties arriving, a little distance between them always, a strong whiff of watchful wariness. And one of the Ashaman was Loghain Ablar.
Loghain? An Ashaman wearing the sword and dragon on his collar.
Bashir and Loghain both wanted to talk to him, but not in front of anyone, especially each other, it seemed. Unexpected or not, though, they were hardly the most surprising of the visitors. He had thought the Aes Sedai must be more friends of Cadswain, yet he would swear she had been as surprised as he to see most of them. Otter, all but one seemed to be with the Ashaman. Not prisoners, and certainly not guards. But Loghain had been reluctant to explain with Bashir present, and Bashir reluctant to leave Loghain the first chance to talk to Rand alone. Now they were all drying off and settling into their rooms, leaving him to try to put his thoughts in order, to the extent that he could, with Min close by. What would Cadswain do? Well, he had tried to ask her advice. Events had outrun both of them, though. The decision had been made, whatever Cadswain thought. Lightning flashed again in the windows. Lightning seemed to suit Cadswain. You could never tell where it would strike.
Olivia would finish her, Luce Theron muttered. She's going to help us die. She'd remove Cadswain for us if you tell her to.
I don't want to kill her, Rand thought at the dead man. I can't afford for her to die. Luce Theron knew that as well as he, but the man grumbled under his breath anyway. Since Shadar Logoth, he seemed a touch less mad sometimes. Or maybe Rand was a touch more. After all, he took to talking to a dead man in his head as a matter of every day, and that was hardly sane.
You have to do something, Min muttered, folding her arms beneath her breasts. Loghain's aura still speaks of glory, stronger than ever. Maybe he still thinks he's the real dragon reborn. And there's something dark in the images I saw around Lord Davram. If he turns against you or dies... I heard one of the soldiers say Lord Dobrain might die. Losing even one of them would be a blow. Lose all three, and it might take you a year to recover.
If you've seen it, then it's going to happen. I have to do what I can, Min, not worry over what I can't. She gave him one of those looks women had in great store, as if he were trying to start an argument. A scratching at the door brought his head around and made Min shift her stance. He suspected she had slipped a throwing knife out of her sleeve and was hiding it behind her wrist. The woman carried more knives tucked about her than Tom Marilyn had. Or Matt. Colors whirled in his head, almost resolving into... what? A man on a wagon seat? Not the face that sometimes appeared in his thoughts anyway. And the scene was gone in an instant, without any of the dizziness that accompanied the face. Come, he called, standing up. Elsa spread her dark green skirts in an elegant curtsy when she entered, her eyes bright on his face. A pleasant-appearing woman, and coolly complacent as a cat, she hardly seemed to see Min. Of all the sisters who had sworn to him, Elsa was the most eager. The only eager one, really. The others had their reasons for swearing, their explanations, and of course Varen and the sisters who came to find him at Demise Wells had no real choice facing a Taviren. But for all Elsa's outer coolness, she seemed to burn inside with a passion to see he reach Tarmangaiden.
You said to let you know when the Ogier came, she said, never taking her eyes from his face.
Loyal!
Min shouted gleefully, tucking the knife back up her sleeve as she rushed past Elsa, who blinked at the sight of the blade.
I could have killed Rand for letting you get off to your room before I saw you.
The bond said she did not mean it.
Not exactly.
Thank you, Rand told Elsa, listening to the sounds of merriment from the sitting room, Min's light laughter and Loyal's quake of Ogier mirth, like the earth laughing. Thunder rolled across the sky. Perhaps the Aes Sedai's passion extended to wanting to know what he said to Loyal, because her lips thinned and she hesitated before making another curtsy and sweeping out of the bedchamber. A brief pause in the sounds of pleasure announced her passage across the sitting room, and their resumption, her departure. Only then did he seize the power. He tried never to let anyone see him do that. Fire flooded into him, hotter than the sun, and cold to make the worst blizzard seem spring, all a swirling rage that dwarfed the storm outside, threatening to scour him away for a moment's inattention. Seizing Cydene was a war for survival. But the green of the cornices was suddenly greener, the black of his coat blacker, the gold of its embroidery more golden. He could see the grain of the vine-carved bedposts, see faint marks left by the craftsman's sanding all those years ago. Cydene made him feel as if he had been half-blind and numb without it. That was a part of what he felt.
Clean, Luce Theron whispered. Pure and clean again.
It was. The foulness that had marked the male half of the power since the breaking was gone. That did not stop nausea from rising in Rand, though, the violent urge to bend double and empty himself on the floor. The room seemed to spin for an instant, and he had to put a hand on the nearest bedpost to steady himself. He did not know why he should still feel this sickness with the taint gone. Luce Theron did not know, or would not tell. But the sickness was the reason he could not let anyone see him take hold of Saidin, if he could help it. Elsa might burn to see him reach the last battle, but too many others wanted to see him fall. Not all of them dark friends. In that moment of weakness, the dead man reached for Saidin. Rand could feel him clawing for it greedily. Was it harder than it had been to push him away? In some ways, Luce Theron seemed more solidly part of him since Shadar Logoth. It did not matter. He had only so far left to go before he could die. He just had to last that far. Drawing a deep breath, he ignored the lingering traces of sickness in his belly and strode into the sitting room to the crash of thunder. Min stood in the middle of the room, holding one of Loyal's hands in both of hers and smiling up at him. It took both of her hands to hold one of Loyal's, and the pair did not come close to covering it. The top of his head missed the plaster ceiling by a little more than a foot. He had donned a fresh coat of dark blue wool, the bottom flaring over baggy trousers to the tops of his knee-high boots, but for once his pockets did not bulge with the angular shapes of books. Eyes the size of teacups lit up at the sight of Rand, and the grin on his wide mouth really did split his face in two. The tufted ears sticking up through his shaggy hair quivered with pleasure.
"Lord Algarin has Ogier guest rooms, Rand,"
he boomed in a voice like a deep drum.
"Can you imagine it? 6 of them. Of course, they haven't been used in some time, but they're aired out every week, so there isn't any mustiness. And the bedsheets are very good linen. I thought I'd be back to doubling myself up in a human-sized bed. We aren't staying here long, are we?"
His long ears sagged a little, then began to twitch uneasily.
"I don't think we should. I mean, I might get used to having a real bed, and that wouldn't do if I'm going to stay with you. I mean, well, you know what I mean."
"I know," Rand said softly. He could have laughed at the Ogier's consternation. He should have laughed. Laughter just seemed to have escaped him lately. Spinning a web against eavesdropping around the room, he knotted it so he could release Saidin. The last traces of nausea began to fade immediately. He could control the sickness, usually, with an effort, but there was no point when he did not have to. "Did any of your books get wet?" Loyal's main concern coming in had been to check on his books. Suddenly it struck him that he had thought of what he had done as spinning a web. That was how Luce Theron would put it. That sort of thing happened too often. The other man's turns of phrase drifting into his head, the other man's memories mingling with his. He was Randall Thor, not Luce Theron Telamon. He had woven a ward and tied off the weave, not spun a web, and knotted it. But the one came to him as easily as the other.
"My essays of Willem Menetches got damp,"
Loyal said disgustedly, rubbing his upper lip with a finger the thickness of a sausage. Had he been careless shaving, or was that the beginning of a mustache beneath his wide nose?
"The pages may spot. I shouldn't have been so careless, not with a book. And my book of notes took some wet, too. But the ink didn't run. Everything is still readable, but I really need to make a case to protect—"
Slowly a frown crept onto his face, dangling the long ends of his eyebrows onto his cheeks.
"You look tired, Rand. He looks tired, Min."
"He's been doing too much, but he's resting now," Min said defensively. And Rand did smile. A little. Min would always defend him, even to his friends. "You are resting, sheepherder," she added, letting go of Loyal's huge hand and planting her fists on her hips. "Sit down and rest." "Oh, sit down, Loyal. I'll put a crick in my neck if I keep staring up at you."
Loyal chuckled, the bellowing of a bull muted in his throat, as he examined one of the straight-backed chairs dubiously. Compared to him, it seemed a chair made for a child.
"Sheepherder. You don't know how good it is to hear you calling him sheepherder, Min."
He sat down cautiously. The plain-carved chair creaked under his weight, and his knees stuck up in front of him.
I am sorry, Rand, but it is funny, and I haven't heard much to laugh at these past months.
The chair was holding. With a quick glance toward the hall door, he added, a little too loudly,
Carldin doesn't have much sense of humor.
You can speak freely, Rand told him. We're safe behind a ward.
He had almost said behind a shield, which was not the same thing, except that he knew it was. He was too weary to sit, just as he was too tired to find sleep easily most nights. His bones ached with it. So he went to stand in front of the fireplace. Winds gusting across the chimney top made the flames dance on the split logs and sometimes let a small puff of smoke into the room, and he could hear the rain drumming away at the windows, but the thunder seemed to have moved on. Maybe the storm was ending. Clasping his hands behind his back, he turned away from the fire. What did the elders say, Loyal? Instead of answering straight away, Loyal looked at Min as if seeking encouragement or support. Perched on the edge of a blue armchair with her knees crossed, she smiled at the Ogier and nodded, and he sighed heavily, a wind gusting through deep caverns.
Carldin and I visited every Steading, Rand. All but Steading Shangtai, of course. I couldn't go there, but I left a message everywhere we went, and Daiting isn't far from Shangtai. Someone will carry it there. The Great Stump is meeting in Shangtai, and that will attract crowds. This is the first time a Great Stump has been called in 1,000 years, not since you humans fought the War of the 100 Years, and it was Shangtai's turn. They must be considering something very important, but no one would tell me why it was called. They won't tell you about any stump until you have a beard,
he muttered, fingering a narrow patch of stubble on his broad chin. Apparently he intended to remedy his lack, though it was not certain that he could. Loyal was over 90 years old now, yet for an Ogier, that was still a boy. The elders? Rand asked patiently. You had to be patient with Loyal, with any Ogier. They did not see time the way humans did. Who among humans would think of whose turn it was after 1,000 years? And Loyal tended to go on at length, given half a chance. Great length. Loyal's ears twitched, and he gave Min another look, received another encouraging smile in return.
Well, as I said, I visited all the Steading but Shangtai. Carldin wouldn't go inside. He'd rather sleep every night under a bush than be cut off from the source for a minute.
Rand did not say a word, but Loyal raised his hands from his knees, palms out.
I'm getting to the point, Rand, I am. I did what I could, but I don't know whether it was enough. The Steading in the Borderlands told me to go home and leave matters to older and wiser heads. So did Shadoon and Mardoon, in the mountains on the Shuttle Coast. The other Steading agreed to guard the way gates. I don't think they really believe there's any danger, but they agreed. So you know they will keep a close guard. And I'm sure someone will take word to Shangtai. The elders in Shangtai never liked having a way gate right outside the Steading. I must have heard Elder Hammond say 100 times that it was dangerous. I know they'll agree to have it watched.
Rand nodded slowly. Ogier never lied, or at least the few who made an attempt were so poor at it that they seldom tried a second time. An Ogier's word was taken as seriously as anyone else's sworn oath. The way gates would be guarded closely, except for those in the borderlands and in the mountains south of Amadisia and Terabon. From gate to gate a man could journey from the spine of the world to the Arath Ocean, from the borderlands to the Sea of Storms, all in a strange world somehow outside of time, or maybe alongside it. 2 days walking along the ways could carry you 100 miles or 500, depending on the paths you chose, and if you were willing to risk the dangers. You could die very easily in the ways, or worse. The ways had turned dark and corrupted long ago. Trollocs did not care about that, though, at least not when they had Murdral driving them. Trollocs cared only for killing, especially when they had Murdral driving them. And 9 way gates would remain unwatched, with the danger that any of them might open up to let out Trollocs by the tens of thousands. Setting any sort of guard without the Steading's cooperation might be impossible. Many people did not believe Ogier existed, and few of those who did wanted to meddle without leave. Maybe the Ashaman, if he had enough he could trust. Suddenly, he realized that he was not the only one who was tired. Loyal looked worn and gaunt. His coat was rumpled and hung loosely on him. It was dangerous for an Ogier to be outside the steading too long, and Loyal had left his home a good 5 years ago. Maybe those brief visits over the last few months had not been enough for him. Maybe you should go home now, Loyal. Steading Shangtai is only a few days from here. Loyal's chair creaked alarmingly as he sat bolt upright. His ears shot upright, too, in alarm.
My mother will be there, Rand. She's a famous speaker. She would never miss a great stump.
She can't have come all the way back from the Two Rivers already, Rand told him. Loyal's mother was supposedly a famous walker, too. Yet there were limits, even for Ogier.
You don't know my mother,
Loyal muttered, a drum booming darkly.
She'll still have Aerith in tow, too. She will.
Mindling toward the Ogier, a dangerous light in her eyes.
The way you talk about Aerith, I know you want to marry her. So why do you keep running from her?
Rand studied her from the fireplace. Marriage. Avienda assumed that he would marry her, and Elaine and Min as well, in the Aiel fashion. Elaine appeared to think so, too, strange as that seemed. He thought she did. What did Min think? She had never said. He should never have let them bond him. The bond would smother them in grief when he died. Loyal's ears trembled with caution now. Those ears were one reason Ogier made poor liars. He made placating gestures as though Min were the larger of them.
Well, I do, Min. Of course I do. Aerith is beautiful and very perceptive. Did I ever tell you how carefully she listened to me explain about... Of course I did. I tell everybody I meet. I do want to marry her, but not yet. It isn't like with you humans, Min. You do everything Rand asks. Aerith will expect me to settle down and stay home. Wives never let a husband go anywhere or do anything, if it means leaving the steading for more than a few days. I have to finish my book, and how can I do that if I don't see everything Rand does? I'm sure he's done all sorts of things since I left Kyrian, and I know I'll never get it all down right. Aerith just wouldn't understand. Min? Min, are you angry with me?
What makes you think I'm angry? She said coolly.
Loyal sighed heavily, and so clearly in relief that Rand almost stared.
Light, the Ogier actually thought she meant she was not angry.
Rand knew he was feeling his way in the dark when it came to women, even men, maybe especially men. But Loyal had better learn a lot more than he already knew before he married his Aerith. Otherwise, she would skin him out like a sick goat. Best to get him out of the room before Min did Aerith's job for her. Rand cleared his throat. Think on it overnight, Loyal, he said. Maybe you'll change your mind by morning. Part of him hoped Loyal would. The Ogier had been too long from home. Another part of him, though, he could use Loyal if what Olivia had told him about the Seanchan was true. Sometimes he disgusted himself. In any case, I need to talk to Bashir now. And Loghain. His mouth tightened around the name. What was Loghain doing in Ashaman Black? Loyal did not stand. Indeed, his expression grew more troubled, ears slanting back and eyebrows drooping.
Rand, there is something I need to tell you about the Aes Sedai who came with us.
Lightnings flared anew outside the windows as he went on, and the thunder crashed overhead harder than ever. With some storms, a lull only meant the worst was coming.
I told you to kill them all when you had the chance, Luce Theron laughed. I told you.
Are you positive they've been bonded, Sumitsu? Cadzwain asked firmly, and loudly enough to be heard over the thunder booming on the manor house's rooftop. Thunder and lightning fit her mood. She would have liked to snarl. It required a goodly measure of her training and experience to sit calmly and sip hot ginger tea. She had not let emotion get the upper hand in a very long time, but she wanted to bite something, or someone. Sumitsu held a porcelain cup of tea, too, but she had yet to swallow a drop, and she had ignored Cadswain's offer of a chair. The slender sister turned from peering into the flames of the left-hand fireplace the bells in her dark hair jingling as she shook her head. She had not bothered to dry her hair properly, and it hung damp and heavy down her back. Her hazel eyes were uneasy. "It's hardly the sort of question I could ask a sister now, is it, Cadswain? And they certainly didn't tell me. As who would? At first I thought maybe they had done like Maurice and Kareel, and poor Daigyan." A brief wince of sympathy crossed her face. She knew in full the pain that was gnawing at Daigyan over her loss. Any sister beyond her first warder knew that too well. "But it's plain Tovain and Gabrella are both with Loghain. I think Gabrella is betting him. If there's bonding been done, it was the men who did it." "Turnabout," Cadswain muttered into her tea. Some said that turnabout was fair play, but she had never believed in fighting fair. Either you fought or you did not, and it was never a game. Fairness was for people standing safely to one side, talking while others bled. Unfortunately, there was little she could do beyond trying to find a way to balance events. Balance was not at all the same as fairness. What a dog's dinner this was turning into. "I'm glad you gave me at least a little warning before I have to face Tovain and the others, but I want you to return to Cairhien the first thing tomorrow." "There was nothing I could do, Cadswain," Sumitsu said bitterly. "Half the people I gave an order had begun checking with Sashal to see if it was right, and the other half told me to my face she'd already said different. Lord Bashir talked her into turning the warders loose. I have no idea how he found out about them in the first place, and she talked Soralia into it, and there wasn't the least thing I could do to stop it. Soralia was behaving as if I had just abdicated. She doesn't understand, and she made it plain she thinks I'm a fool. There's no point at all in me going back, unless you expect me to carry Sashal's gloves for her." "I expect you to watch her, Sumitsu. No more than that. I want to know what one of these dragon-sworn sisters does when neither I nor the wise ones are looking over their shoulders and holding a switch. You've always been very observant." Patience was not always her strongest trait, but sometimes it was required with Sumitsu. The yellow was observant and intelligent and strong-willed most of the time, not to mention the best alive at healing, at least until the appearance of Dahmer Flynn. But she could suffer the most astonishing collapses in her confidence. The stick never worked with Sumitsu, but pats on the back did, and it was ridiculous not to use what worked. As Cadswain reminded her how intelligent she was, how skilled at healing, that was always necessary with Sumitsu. She could go into a depression over failing to heal a dead man. How clever, the Arafelan sister began to draw up her composure and her self-assurance. "You can be assured Sashal won't change her stockings without I know it," she said crisply. In truth, Cadswain expected no less. "But if you don't mind me asking..." With her confidence restored, Sumitsu's tone made that the merest courtesy. She was no shrinking flower except when her self-assurance weakened. "Why are you here at the back end of Tyr? What's young Althor going to do? Or should I say, what are you going to have him do?" "He intends something very dangerous," Cadswain replied. Lightning flashed outside the windows, sharp silver forks in a sky near as dark as night. She knew exactly what he intended. She just did not know whether to stop it.
"It has to end," Rand thundered, echoed by the crashes in the sky. He had doffed his coat before this interview and rolled up his shirt sleeves to bear the dragons twined around his forearms in scarlet and gold, the golden-maned heads resting on the backs of his hands. He wanted the man in front of him reminded with every look that he was facing the dragon reborn. But his hands were fists, to keep him from giving in to Luce Theron's urgings and throttling bloody Loghain Ablar. "I don't need a war with the White Tower, and you bloody Ashaman bloody well won't give me a war with the White Tower. Do I make myself understood?"
Loghain, hands resting easily atop the long hilt of his sword, did not flinch. He was a big man, if smaller than Rand, with a steady gaze that gave no sign that he had been dressed down or called to account. The silver sword and red and gold dragon glittered brightly in the lamplight on the high collar of his black coat, and that itself looked freshly ironed.
"Are you saying release them?" he asked calmly. "Will the Aes Sedai release those of ours they've taken?"
"No,"
Rand said curtly, and sourly. What's done can't be undone. Maurice had been so shocked when he suggested she release Narishma, you would have thought he was asking her to abandon a puppy by the side of the road. And he suspected Flynn would fight as hard to hang on to Kareel as she to him. He was fairly certain there was more between those two than the bond now. Well, if an Aes Sedai could bond a man who channeled, what was to say a pretty woman could not fix on a gimpy old man? You realize the mess you've created, though, don't you? As it is, the only man who can channel that Elida once alive is me, and that only till the last battle is done. Once she learns of this, she'll be twice as hot to see you all dead any way she can manage it. I don't know how the other lot will react, but Egwene was always a sharp bargainer. I may have to tell off Ashaman for Aes Sedai to bond until they have as many of you as you do of them. That's if they don't just decide you all have to die as soon as they can arrange it too. What's done is done, but there cannot be any more. Loghain stiffened a little more with every word, but his gaze held on Rand's. It was plain as horns on a ram that he was ignoring the others in the sitting room. Min had wanted no part of this meeting, and had taken herself off to read. Rand could not make up from down in Herod Fell's books, but she found them fascinating. He had insisted Loyal remain, though, and the Ogier was pretending to study the flames in the fireplace. Except when he glanced at the door, tufted ears twitching as if wondering whether he could slip out unnoticed under cover of the storm. Davram Bashir appeared even shorter than he really was alongside the Ogier, a graying man with dark-tilted eyes, a beak of a nose, and thick mustaches curving down around his mouth. He had worn his sword, too, a shorter blade than Loghain's, and serpentine. Bashir spent more time peering into his wine cup than looking at anything else, but whenever his eyes touched Loghain, he unconsciously ran a thumb along his sword hilt. Rand thought it was unconscious.
Taim gave the order, Loghain said,
coldly uncomfortable explaining himself in front of an audience. Sudden lightning close to the house cast his face in lurid shadows for an instant, a bleak mask of darkness.
I assumed it came from you.
His eyes moved slightly in Bashir's direction, and his mouth tightened.
Taim does a great many things people think are at your direction, he went on reluctantly. But he has his own plans. Flynn and Narishma and Manfor are on the deserters list, like every Ashaman you kept with you. And he has a coterie of 20 or 30 he keeps close and trains privately. Every man who wears the dragon is one of that group except me. And he'd have kept the dragon from me if he dared. No matter what you've done, it is time to turn your eyes to the Black Tower before Taim splits it worse than the White Tower is. If he does, you'll find the larger part is loyal to him, not you. They know him. Most have never even seen you.
Irritably, Rand pushed his sleeves down and dropped into a chair. What he had done made no matter to Loghain. The man knew Saidin was clean, but he could not believe Rand or any man had actually done the cleansing. Did he think the Creator had decided to stretch out a merciful hand after 3,000 years of suffering? The Creator had made the world, and then left humankind to make of it what they would. A heaven, or the pit of doom by their choosing. The Creator had made many worlds, watched each flower or die, and gone on to make endless worlds beyond. A gardener did not weep for each blossom that fell. For an instant he thought those must have been Luz Theron's reflections. He had never gone on that way about the Creator or anything else that he recalled. But he could feel Luz Theron nodding in approval, a man listening to someone else. Still, it was not the kind of thing he would have considered before Luz Theron. How much space remained between them?
Taim will have to wait, he said wearily.
How long could Taim wait? He was surprised not to hear Luz Theron raging for him to kill the man. He wished that made him feel easier.
Did you just come to see that Loghain reached me safely, Bashir? Or to tell me somebody stabbed Dobrain? Or do you have an urgent task for me, too?
Bashir raised an eyebrow at Rand's tone, and his jaw tightened as he glanced at Loghain, but after a moment he snorted so hard his thick mustaches should have shaken.
Two men ransacked my tent, he said, setting his wine cup down on a carved blue table against the wall. One carrying a note I could swear I wrote myself if I didn't know better. In order to carry away certain items. Loyal tells me the fellows who knifed Dobrain had the same sort of note, apparently in Dobrain's hand. A blind man could see what they were after, with a little thought. Dobrain and I are the most likely candidates to be guarding the seals for you. You have 3, and you say 3 are broken. Maybe the shadow knows where the last is.
Loyal had turned from the fireplace as the Saldaean spoke, his ears rigid, and now he burst out.
That is serious, Rand. If someone breaks all the seals on the Dark One's prison, or maybe even just one or two more, the Dark One could break free. Even you can't face the Dark One. I mean, I know the prophecies say you will, but that has to be just a way of speaking.
Even Loghain looked concerned, his eyes studying Rand as if measuring him against the Dark One. Rand leaned back in his chair, careful not to let his tiredness show. The seals in the Dark One's prison on one hand, Taim splitting the Ashaman on the other. Was the seventh seal already broken? Was the shadow beginning the opening moves of the last battle?
You told me something once, Bashir. If your enemy offers you two targets, strike at a third, Bashir finished promptly. And Rand nodded.
He had already decided anyway. Thunder rattled the windows till the casements shook. The storm was strengthening.
I can't fight the Shadow and the Shan Chan at the same time. I'm sending the three of you to arrange a truce with the Shan Chan.
Bashir and Loghain seemed stunned into silence, until they began to argue, one on top of the other. Loyal just looked ready to faint.
Elsa fidgeted, listening to Fierol report what had occurred since she left him in Cairion. It was not the man's harsh voice that irritated her. She hated lightning and wished she could ward away the violent lights flashing in the windows as she had warded her room against eavesdropping. No one would think her wish for privacy strange, since she had spent 20 years convincing everyone that she was married to the pale-haired man. Despite his voice, Fierol looked the sort a woman would marry, tall and lean and quite pretty. The hard edge to his mouth only made his face more so, really. Of course, some might think it peculiar that she had never had more than one warder at a time if they stopped to think about it. A man with just the right qualifications was difficult to find, but perhaps she should start looking. Lightning lit up the windows again. "Yes, yes, enough," she broke in finally. "You did the right thing, Fierol. It would have been taken as odd if you were the only one to refuse to find your Aes Sedai." A sense of relief flashed through the bond. She was strict about obedience to her orders, and while he knew she could not kill him, would not at least, punishment only required her to mask the bond so she did not share his pain. That, and a ward to muffle his screams. She disliked screaming almost as much as she disliked lightning. "It is just as well you're with me," she went on. A pity that the Aiel savages were still holding Farah, though she would have to quiz the White on exactly why she had sworn before she could be trusted. Until the journey to Cairion, she had not known she shared anything with Farah. A very great pity that none of her own heart was with her. But only she had been sent to Cairion, and she did not question the orders she received any more than Fierol questioned those she gave. "I think a few people are going to have to die soon," as soon as she decided which ones. Fierol bowed his head, and a jolt of pleasure came through the bond. He did like killing. "In the meanwhile, you will kill anyone who threatens the Dragon Reborn. Anyone." After all, it had become perfectly clear to her, while she herself was a captive of the savages. The Dragon Reborn had to reach Tarmogoyden, or how could the Great Lord defeat him there?